Here's Higdon. It sits up nicely for Michael Higdon. And what a start for Motherwell. But here's Malt, and he goes for it for Son. Magnificent Malt. Stephen Robinson celebrates. Motherwell, 2-1. Could that be the goal that puts him into the Betfred Cup final?
He's got Irwin. The supporting links from Ainsworth on the angle. Lionel Ainsworth fires home.
It's Lasley deep into stoppage time. Up goes Sutton. No foul given. Kerr. And Reid is there to knock it in. The goal is given. Hesitation for Craig Reid, who scores his first ever goal in senior football. And what a moment for Motherwell.
Hello and welcome to the MFC podcast. Tonight I'm delighted to welcome along Pepe as always, and we've got a Livingston fan to provide a wee bit of perspective from the other side and what hopefully will be our next game. Ewan Devine, how you going, mate?
I'm good, mate. Just obviously coming to terms with the news today, which is a bit depressing to say the least, but yeah, all good apart from that. What about yourselves?
Yeah, not doing too badly, and I think that where we would normally start talking about the previous games and kind of giving a wee bit of analysis, I think that the news of fans being essentially locked out of football again is going to be the main talking point, and we've had a wee bit of a blether for the last 10-15 minutes before hitting the button. It's a really tough one to take, isn't it, Pepe?
Oh, I'm absolutely gutted, to be honest with you. That might sound like a overreaction, but since been back at the football, it's been the kind of the highlight of the week. For me, it's my personal choice. If I want to go, do I feel safe? I do, 100%. You can go into a shopping centre or a supermarket and probably bump into as many people in the same similar way as what you do at the football. The only time that it's maybe a wee bit more busy is when you're leaving, which I'm sure that everybody can manage that themselves. But I don't think you can compare it to people saying, "Oh, I've lost my job or lost loved ones." That's tragic and it's really bad. But this still affects my life, the enjoyment in my life. It's time that I get to spend with people that maybe had a seat at football and people that you maybe don't really know, people that you sit next to. And it's just good having a bit of normality in your life. I've lived 2 years of this just about, and getting back to a kind of a almost taking it for granted again, where you're kind of a feels as if you're dragging yourself to the games, and then you suddenly realise, well, it wasn't that long ago that we weren't getting going. And it just feels as if football is the first and easiest way to as a target, as usual. The other thing that I find frustrating is it's turned into a kind of Old Firm battle now, or Celtic are saying that they want the break brought forward, which to me makes sense. Rangers against it for selfish reasons. Now, I'm not taking Celtic side, I disagree their side of the argument just now, but if I was a Rangers fan I could understand their side of it, but that's not for us to argue about, that's for them. I'm just gutted that I'm going to miss out on some football at Christmas. For me is part and parcel of the festive period, trying to palm your family off with excuses about going to Dingwall on the 29th of December midweek is something now that I'm not going to be able to get. I have to go and sit in some family party that wishing I was on a bus on the way back for Dingwall in the freezing cold. But I think we're all going to be in agreement to this, and I've never heard a football fan saying that they think it's a good thing. I really don't. I don't want to sound over dramatic, but I'm devastated that it's came to this again. Getting back to streams and stuff like that, it's just shocking. And she's as well shutting the football down. 500 fans. Is anybody really want to go to a stadium where there's 500 fans? I don't know about that.
I pretty much do that most weeks, to be honest with us. But nah, I mean, I couldn't agree more with what you're saying. Like, it's football's an escapism for a lot of folk. You know, if you look at the stats on, you know, not meaning to go too morbid or anything, but if you look for like stats on men's suicide in the last couple of years, it's frightening. But for a lot of those folk, the difference might, you know, be that they've not had things like the football to go to, you know, things that where they get to socialise with their friends and speak with their friends in a kind of almost a safe environment, you know, which is the football, and, you know, get that escapism. I know for me last year, when Scotland qualified for the Euros, like, the one thing that got me through that second lockdown was the thought of getting to watch Scotland at the Euros. And obviously Libby had a brilliant unbeaten run, but it was still deflating at the same time. You know, we went 14 games unbeaten and reached a cup final, and I was sitting in my living room by myself for all of it. It's not the same. It's just not the same at all. And as you say, like, I know folk have lost loved ones and lost jobs, you know, those are all huge things in life, and I'm not in any way degrading that sort of thing. But for other folk, football is really important. You know, I know for myself, I go and watch, well, prior to COVID, I was going to watch Livy in some shape or form three times a week doing our podcast. I'd have 3 or 4 days that are committed to going to watch Livy, going to watch the first team, the reserves, the women's team, recording the podcast, interviewing players, interviewing ex-players, things like that. Such a massive, massive chunk of your week just gone. And anyone that says they enjoy the experience of watching it on a stream clearly doesn't go and watch games in the flesh for me, because it's not the same. It's not the same in the slightest. And the thought is, it's depressing. It's depressing, the thought of going back to watching games on a stream. It really is.
Yeah, I'd have to agree. And I think I don't know about you guys, but I've just felt flat all day. It's just been, as you say, such a release. And it's hard to kind of get my head around the fact that it was only 2 or 3 days ago that I was at Firth Park watching Motherwell St Johnstone. And I never considered the fact that this would be the last time I would be in the ground for who knows how long. We had the 2-week circuit breaker last time that lasted 6 months. Are we going to be back anytime soon? What is the logic behind, well, Firth Park holds 14,000 people and you can get 500 in. Celtic Park holds 62,000 people and you can get 500 in. Where's the kind of rationale behind all this? Shutting down football is almost a kind of headline news, and that's the reason for it. I don't understand it a lot.
For me, I think there's going to be more people going to people's houses. There's going to be people packing into pubs now. Yes, they're saying it'll be table service only, but pubs have been through a hard time as well, so they're going to knock back custom. So I think that, if anything, it's going to be even worse, because it's going to be worse if people are going to, if everybody knows somebody that built a man cave, so they're going to be having the Old Firm Day or whatever Motherwell game and Boxing Day of all their mates around. But there's probably far easier to pass on any sort of variant of this COVID with a house party or whatever else that people decide to do. Whereas we're at the football, we're out in the open air. Alan Burrows had a great tweet today, and clubs have went above and beyond and put in hand sanitizer. We've to wear our masks when we're walking about the stadium. There's staggered entrance and exit times that needs to be implicated. Now, if they even reduced the numbers to similar to the what it was like at the start of the season, then you could even understand it. But 500 across the board to me is absolutely ludicrous, because all the stadiums are different sizes. So where's the rational decision making in that?
Well, I saw a good tweet earlier today. Edinburgh City's ground, so they're currently using Ainslie Park. The capacity at Ainslie Park is 500. So essentially they can have a full ground. where's the logic in it? As you said, Celtic Park's a 62,000 seater stadium and you're only allowed 500 people in it. Where's the logic? Where's the logic in that?
It's almost a dangerous thing as well, because I think our season ticket holders number is around about 4,000 just now, so that essentially means 1 in 8 people can go to the game against Livingston on Boxing Day. How do you decide who merits going over? It almost becomes a competition of who's a better fan and everything else, and I think that's quite a dangerous path to go down as well. Would it maybe be better to actually just go, do you know what, no one's getting in? I think this could actually cause a wee bit of hostility and bad blood as well.
No, it's definitely got that, isn't it? I think some clubs will actually cost the club to have 500 fans here when it comes to stewarding and catering. And some clubs, I mean, if you look at the size of Ibrox, Celtic Park, I suppose even to an extent Edinburgh clubs in Aberdeen, how many stands do they open? I just don't think it's cost effective for any club to do it. And I think the best decision would just be to say, right, look, there's no point in having any fans. We'll just leave it as it is. There is obviously some fans out there that would want to go and go to every single game, and I include myself in that. But in this circumstance, I don't think there's a fair way of doing it, other than names in a hat. I just think it's ridiculous.
I agree with that. You know, I'll go back to the Euros, and I was very lucky. I managed to get to all three games, and the amount of comments I got, you know, when I was tweeting that I was at the games and stuff like that, or messages from folk, how the hell did you get tickets? I was like, well, I have travelled to places like Albania and San Marino and Cyprus and things like that to, you know, get the opportunity to do this. But as you say, it can create that animosity amongst fans. I know for Livy, we only have about 800 season ticket holders, but our fans can be quite grumpy at the best of times, to put it lightly. So again, I would rather just nobody went, and you know, I think a lot of clubs will go down that route, to be honest. Especially the bigger clubs where, as you say, you know, like the likes of a Hearts and Hibs, you know, I'm pretty sure for the Cup final, the Scottish Cup final, Hibs and St Johnstone got allocated 300 tickets each and they just went, what's the point? And didn't bother allocating them to folk. And I think clubs will go down the same route because, you know, 500 fans, where's the logic? You know, and it doesn't help when the chief medical officer came out last week, Jason Leach, and says, oh, fans at the Cup final, at the League Cup final, will be perfectly safe because they're in an outside area. I mean, talk about causing confusion amongst football fans, but he came out and said that, and then the following week were, you know, being stopped from going to the games again. Anyone that says that football fans are overreacting, I think is unfair, because you're given misleading comments like that from folk who are in charge, essentially.
Yeah, and the thing is, I find it quite difficult to hear them cracking jokes and things like that on off the ball now as well. I know that that's the kind of platform that he's chosen to use to communicate with football supporters and things like that, but it just doesn't feel like a time for jokes, really. I think the majority of us are rightfully scunnered by what's happened today. And the other thing I've kind of been considering is how many, we must have enough midweeks, given that we've got the 3 week winter break coming in a short period of time anyway, to just play these games. Hopefully we get through this next 3 or 4 weeks, whatever it turns out to be. Play the games in April, May time. We should be able to fit them into our schedule. I don't think this is really a catastrophe, because December is such a busy month anyway, where we're going to have to play 3 games in the space of a week. Surely we can find time for these games further down the line, maybe scrap Scottish Cup replays or something like that. But I think football without fans is a soulless experience. And to be 14, 15 months down the line and be back to this situation again, I'm not about to advocate that people dismiss the rules or the regulations, but you can understand why they are.
I think everything that we're going to say here, we're all going to agree. It's real, real frustration. People now are getting to the stage where there's more and more people. If you go back to the very start of this, I took this as a wee bit of a novelty, and people were like, oh, you know what I mean? It was like kids were getting home from school, and it was time where you would spend with the family, and everybody would go out the walk, and the football will be back before you know it. It'll be 3 weeks, like we're getting told just now. But now people are just getting to the stage where I think they're just going to do their own thing, and each to their own, to be honest with you. It's just so frustrating. It wouldn't surprise me if fans then start to gather outside stadiums. We had one recently where we didn't get tickets for Ibrox, and there was quite a number of fans turned up outside the stadium, and it wouldn't surprise me if that's what starts to happen, as some sort of protest.
Well, start to try and talk about the football, and it's kind of difficult, I suppose, to preview what comes ahead, given the circumstances and given that everything's so up in the air. But we'll talk about our game against St Johnstone, and we'll also discuss slightly in less detail your game against Ross County, Ewan. Pepe, it was a very comfortable afternoon for us. I said in another podcast last night, I genuinely think that St Johnstone are the worst team that have come to Fir Park this season. It was a very, very one-sided game, and completely not what you expect from a St Johnstone team who are normally so robust and so difficult to break down. But we won the game at a canter.
They looked relatively okay at the back, to an extent. I felt as if their midfield was nowhere, and they have got nothing at all up front. They showed absolutely nothing. And I was actually a wee bit disappointed that it was only 2-0. It could have been a lot more, and I think they've got, unless they have a real big transfer window, they really, really are in trouble. The other thing that's strange is you see that some of their fans are actually calling for the manager's head after them winning a cup double. It's actually, they look a wee bit like what we did this time last year, kind of stale under the manager. And at the same time, although our manager didn't win either cup final, still got to 2 cup finals, which is a great achievement. But the fact that Carlton Davidson's won 2 of them, and a lot of their fans are getting on his case, they're maybe one of the few clubs that will actually be quite glad about the circumstances at the moment with regards to potentially football stopping, because some clubs will gain out of it and some will definitely lose out of it. We're in a relatively good vein of form, so it's really going to go against us. But the game itself, great to see Dean Cornelius score the goal. I said I was really disappointed for him not to score against Hibs, but it's great when it's one of your own that the fans were singing on Saturday. And I was also really happy to see Van Veen not just scoring but also not having a stupid booking. Overall, really satisfactory and kind of an easy performance, and as you say, it's very unusual for a St Johnstone team.
And then that must have coupled with the fact that you got a late goal, Ewan, on Saturday. That must have been a massive boost for you guys. You seem to be very much a mixed bag this season.
Yeah, I mean, how to sum us up is first quarter of the season, very, very tough to watch. I think we've only lost 3 in the last 11 now. So I think we have turned the corner a bit. I think any realistic Livy fan, when you look at the start over the summer, I mean, we had 15, 16 players go out the door and 15, 16 players come in. New backroom team as well, to add to that. And then I think we had 5 or 6 positive COVID tests the whole of last season. I think we had that in pre-season alone. So we had quite a treacherous start to the season. by some miracle, managed to make it through the League Cup group without having to forfeit any games. And then our start to the season, we had four of the top six from last season as well. So when you've got that turnover of players, all those kind of other issues behind the scenes, it's really not ideal. So, and Davies kind of tried to change the shape and things like that. We've been playing typically a kind of 4-3-3 this season, which we haven't done under him before. So there's that as well. But I think the international break back in October, kind of from there on, we kind of turned a corner and we're starting to see a bit more of what you kind of half expect from us all the time. It's kind of a bit more fight, a bit more desire in the middle of the park, very aggressive in the middle of the park. Aubameyang's, I think after settling in, you're starting to see the best of him. Jason Holt's been unbelievable for us this season, probably our player of the year so far. But, you know, the Ross County game at the weekend, you touched on it, it was a good point in the circumstances. I think looking back at the game, at first half in particular, came across as two teams that didn't want to lose, I think was the way I would describe it. Neither team was really going for it, and then they've scored right on the stroke of half time, and I think it probably gave us a bit of a boot up the arse to try and to get into gear, and we've managed to get a point out of the game, which in the grand scheme of things isn't a bad point. And again, the character of the team's been pretty good in the last couple of months. We've had a couple of late goals, you know, late penalty saves, being down to 10 men, managing to get away with points against Dundee United and Celtic. So I think, as I say, we've turned a bit of a corner. It's still not all there, I would say. Still a tad inconsistent, but I think we're starting to get into gear probably at the right time. And we kind of said these four games coming up at the end of December, the Ross County one, yourselves, and then we've got Dundee and St Johnstone, all being well, if the games were to go ahead. So that run of fixtures could kind of be season defining for us.
And Pepe, as much as there'll be kind of shadow thrown at them for plastic pitch and everything else, they're a team that are sort of like our local rivals in Accies, who they seem to find a way every season to, and this season they've certainly pushed in the last kind of 4 or 5 weeks, I've just pushed further up the table and to a period where it looks like they're going to be relatively safe.
Aye, I mean, I've been quite critical of Livingston during the pandemic, no anything to do with a dislike for them. I feel as if they've been one of the clubs with the pricing structure that I think that they've been one of the more expensive for streams and for tickets to go to the game. I think it was it 25 or 26 quid, but it was like 15 quid for a child, I think. So I've been quite critical with that, but as always, I can't ever remember going to Livingston and us having a good performance, and you always do put that down to the pitch. I don't know, having a Livingston fan on, his opinion of the pitch is, but it just feels as if, I mean, the amount of the wee black balls that you see bouncing up, and it just looks really, really bad. I have heard through other managers and stuff saying it's probably one of the better ones, but it just feels wrong when you're at the game. And I think the players feel that a wee bit of that. So sure, I think Livingston do use that to their advantage, quite rightly so.
It's funny, the chat about the pitch, because the pitch is only an advantage when we're winning on it. There's been a lot less chat about the pitch this season because we've only won two games at home and we've won three on the road. So everyone talks about the pitch being an advantage, but we've actually got a better away record this entire year, I think, than we do at home. So, you know, I'll go back to stats under Steve Clark when he was at Kilmarnock. I think Kilmarnock had only won like 3 in 30 games at Rugby Park prior to Steve Clark. Nobody mentions the pitch. Then they go on a similar run, but it's, you know, they've only lost 3 in 30 under Steve Clark. All of a sudden, the pitch is an advantage. I think the pitch is a convenient excuse for a lot of folk, because the vast majority of teams in our league will train on an artificial surface at some point. It's not uncommon. The vast majority of grassroots players now play on artificial pitches pretty much the whole way through setups and things. I think it's a it's an easy get out. Your previous manager, Stephen Robinson, was really bad for it because I was in the press room many a time with him. And he was very bad for using the pitch when Motherwell didn't get 3 points, essentially. But he never mentioned the pitch when Motherwell did get a result. So it was, as I say, it's a convenient thing. But as I say, we've only won 2 games in it this season. So it can't really be described as an advantage when we've got a better away record on grass. So as I say, it's for me, I've got no issue with the pitch. I think for a club of our size, with our resources, for me, it was the logical thing for us to go to an artificial pitch. And the fact that the West Lothian Community Foundation use it on a regular basis, I think Football Buzz use it on a regular basis, and the team train on it on a daily basis as well, saving on costs for training facilities and things like that. For me, it was an absolute no-brainer. I was getting an artificial pitch. I actually thought we should have had 1 year before we did. And I can totally understand why clubs do it. You know, I can totally understand why Hamilton Accies have one, Falkirk have one, Raith Rovers have one, because it just makes sense. And, you know, the season we got promoted from the Championship, we lost something like $100,000 in revenue for postponed games. And granted, we had a couple of games off last year, but one of them was under 7 inches of snow. So as good as artificial pitches are for being all weather, I think 7 inches of snow does play a part in not a game not being on. So as I say, I think, you know, for another example is Rangers. Whenever our games are on Sky against Rangers, you'll see a Rangers player getting interviewed at Murray Park as the entire team training on an artificial pitch. It's, as I say, I think it's a very, very, very easy excuse to use at times.
And do you know what, Pepe? I think that point does hold a fair bit of weight, given that I think back to trips to Accies, Rugby Park and Livingston over the last maybe 5 or 6 seasons, we do get a fair share of results. So it's not as if we can't perform on these surfaces.
Well, I mean, the point about the grassroots football is absolutely bang on. Wisha Wickham is my wee boys team that I help coach. Some of the pitches in South Lanarkshire are grass, and as soon as you go into grass, the boys just can't play on it, because I don't mean can't play, but they find it more difficult to play on the grass. We don't kind of uneven nature of the pitches that we're playing on. But I think that at a professional level, it's completely different. Yes, there's astro pitches at Murray Park, but there's also grass pitches there. And the reason that probably clubs, particularly when you've seen them, are training there, it's because they're training there whilst they're going to be going to play a team on a plastic pitch. I understand the revenue, and I do get the stats say that that is an advantage. I just find that I can't really remember too many great games that I've been to on a plastic pitch, because I think it changes the makeup of the way that the teams perform on it. And again, maybe that's just the way my mindset is. But I don't like them, and I would hate for Motherwell to go to a plastic pitch.
As I say, it's if Livy could afford to maintain a state of the art, fantastic grass surface, absolutely. But you know, I would rather see us play on that surface. You know, I know I've spoke to Livy players in the past about it. Ex Motherwell player Stevie Lawless, I remember having him on the podcast, and he was saying when he was at Partick Thistle, they essentially trained for 6 months a year on an artificial surface. So it wasn't like an unusual thing, but I mind him saying ours was probably one of the best he's played on. Ours is slightly different. I think top surface off it, ourselves, Hamilton Accies and Kilmarnock are all pretty much the same. We have a shock pad underneath ours, so it's not as firm on the bounce as some artificial pitches you get. Folk use the injuries thing. I think it's a myth. You know, I did sport and exercise science at uni and did a study on the stuff. It's like a 0.0001% difference or something like that, if my memory serves me right. So I think there's a few myths created about the artificial surfaces. As I say, if we could afford a fantastic grass state of the art pitch, then absolutely fair enough. But the cost of maintaining that sort of thing on our resources, it's nonsensical. And as I say, I don't really think about the pitch. I'm used to it now. I've been watching us play on it for the last four seasons. I genuinely don't really think about the pitch at all until conversations like this come up. But as I say, I have zero issues with it. I think it's, as I say, I go back to the point, I think it's an easy cop-out for a lot of folk. And, you know, instead of just admitting your team's not played particularly well, it's an easy cop-out to go and blame the pitch in certain scenarios. So, it's the age-old debate. It'll never end in Scottish football. But when you've got... I remember us playing Celtic a couple of seasons back. We drew two each. And Nir Beaton was getting asked about the pitch in the press room. And they just played St Johnstone on the Sunday and then played us on the Wednesday. And I remember him saying, I'd rather play on that pitch than St Johnstone's pitch. And I think if you're a technical team that wants to pass the ball, I think for me, you would rather play on that surface than some of the pitches you're playing in Scotland over the course of the months from about November through to February.
If I'm not wrong, Andy, did you know you used to say that our pitch might actually be too good because it allows the better footballing teams to actually come to Fir Park and roll about the ball about as if it was a bowling green?
Yeah, that's exactly right. I actually was planning on breaking in and just flooding the pitch or something like that to try and level up the playing field. But that, genuinely, especially during the kind of Thunderdome era of Stephen Robinson, where the ball rarely was played on the surface, we were better away from home because the ball was never on the deck at Fir Park. The likes of Celtic and Rangers would come to Fir Park and enjoy a bowling green surface and knock the ball about and beat us 4 or 5 nil every time. But that is the thing that kind of I've got a gripe with, the fact that Livy can rent out their pitch for seven asides and such like all the way through the week. They can train on the pitch. They don't have as many costs because of the artificial surface. But until there's legislation where they're not allowed to play on it, then that's a right, I guess.
That is that. As I said, though, I still prefer watching my little plane on a grass pitch. And I don't think, unless it was meaning the club was going to die effectively again, that they seen this as a revenue that was a means to an end almost, with you and saying that Livingston are probably able to almost live out with their means to an extent by the funding that comes in for the pitch. So you can understand it from that point of view, but it is interesting speaking to you and particularly about the pitch, because it is easy for us to say, oh, going to Livingston or Rugby Park or Hamilton as it was, and it is an easy, very, very easy excuse. So maybe we'll need to think about that going forward.
Yeah, there was
the other thing, sorry, just to jump in with our pitch, the fact we don't own the stadium plays a big part in that pitch got put down because it's council owned, the Tony Macaroni Arena. So we don't own the stadium. So from a council point of view, where are they going to get more revenue from on that facility, on a grass pitch which can't be used other than a Saturday afternoon, or on an artificial pitch which can get benefited from by the community and, you know, us using it on a daily basis as well? That's the other aspect with the surface as well.
You know, I'd like to kind of pick up on what I thought was a really interesting interview with David Martindale before your game against Hearts, whether Livingston was the right name for the club, and he thought if he could maybe turn the clock back, it'd be West Lothian and getting in more fans. He mentioned the fact that the club budget to finish top Premiership, which is testimony to the job he's doing, given the fact that you remain in the top flight and you're more than competitive in the top flight. What was your take on that?
I mean, we had Davey on at the start of the season, and you know, Davey, a spade's a spade. Davey doesn't, sometimes he's almost too honest for his own good. But look, the playing budget at Livy's not changed a great deal since we were in the Championship. It's probably about 1.2 million a year. And when you look at Hearts, the season they got relegated a couple of seasons back, their playing budget was something between 8 and 9 million. So it kind of shows you the chasm in resources that we're up against. I think the main thing with Livy when we relocated, I think we were obviously Meadowbank, Thistle, you've got the two big Edinburgh teams in Hibs and Hearts there. And it made financial sense to move to Livingston. But even moving to Livingston, you're then in the middle of probably the four biggest and best supported teams in the country. You've got Hearts, Hibs one side, and then you've got the Ugly Sisters on the other. So it's a very difficult catchment to pull fans in from. I think the other thing that's probably affected the fan base over the years is has just been the, to put it bluntly, the shite that's been going on behind the scenes. to put it absolutely bluntly, the club's been taken for a ride by numerous people over the years. And I think that's one of the things that gives me a lot of pride about the club now, is that the folk who are there are sensible kind of business people. I know our chief executive, John Moore, personally. He's got several businesses that are all very successful. You know, he's not one for spending out with his means. Davy Martindale, he's been at the club for 7 years. He knows the club like the back of his hand. But for him, everything he does, it's with the club as the first and foremost, you know, at his heart. And it's nice to have folk at the club who care about it for a change. And they're not, you know, going back to the Angelo Missoni era and things like that. You know, it's that was depressing looking back at how big a state the club was in, and was in a state for a good 4, 5, 6 years after that. Still recovering from that. So, you know, it's amazing to see the turnaround at the club, you know, going back to when we got relegated to League One to now. You know, even seeing little bits and pieces that have been done around the stadium, it's great. And the next step is maybe try to build the fan base, but it's always going to be difficult, because you look at the last two seasons, we've finished 5th and 6th in the top flight. We've reached a major cup final and we still only get 800 season ticket holders. I mean, without, you know, handing out free tickets every single week, which again is a cost to the club. You know, you still need to pay for stewarding, you still need to pay for X, Y, Z, you know, for all that. You're relying on, you need to turn those free tickets into paying customers at some point as well. You can't just hand them out for the sake of handing them out all the time. And the club, it's kind of come to terms with it a little bit, that we are always going to be a small supported club, and it's going to be difficult. But I think it makes, for any Livy fan, it makes you a bit prouder of what we've achieved over the last, you know, 5, 6 seasons.
No, that's a really interesting kind of insight to it as well. And do you know what? Like, regardless of the scale of your club, you've got that respect for anyone that chooses not to go for the obvious choices when it comes to Scottish football as well. I think that's something that we all share. And in terms of, that was a lovely segue from me there, but in terms of players that we've shared over the years, we've got plenty of common links, don't we? And you mentioned Stevie Lawless there at the start. That was quite the exit he made from Fir Park earlier on this season. A player that didn't really kind of work out. But you look at Pepe, the likes of Liam Kelly, Declan Gallagher, Ricky Lamy having a much better season as well. Livingston have provided us with a fair few talents.
Yep, definitely. Liam Kelly probably being the pick of the bunch. Even when we signed him in January, probably the most crucial signing that we've had in many years, because we had the worst keeper that I've ever saw at any level of football, and Alan Chapman being in goals. But I didn't appreciate just how good Liam Kelly was. We've actually done pretty well for the players that we've signed for Livingston. If you look at Declan Gallagher, yes, he might not be popular amongst the support now, but the first season he was outstanding. The kind of polar opposite with Ricky Lamy, really, really poor start, maybe come on to it a bit near the end of the season, but this season, when he's been called upon, he's looked really, really good. I remember being at a game last season at Livingston, and Ricky Lamy stuck out as being a big, strong centre half, and I was really happy when we signed him a couple of seasons ago. But yeah, it seems to be a kind of a revolving door with regards to players coming and going. I think there's, was it Jack McMillan that's at Livy just now, and we'd Nicky Devlin for a short period, kind of curtailed with injury. So there's been quite a lot, but it'd be interesting to see what Ewan's view is on the players. But I wouldn't be surprised to see Stephen Lawless in a Livingston shirt come January.
Yeah, well, I know Steve's been back training with us in the last since he left Motherwell, so whether anything comes of that or not remains to be seen. In terms of players that are at Motherwell currently, Liam Kelly, I cannot speak highly enough of. I think we had him on the podcast and things like that. He's a really, really nice lad. He's very down to earth, very funny character. I can imagine he's very good about the place as well. And you know, we had him when we were in League One on loan from Rangers, and when that season he made a couple of kind of clangers against East Fife. They all seemed to come against East Fife for some bizarre reason. Liam had a loan spell there as well. I don't know if that was anything to do with it, but when he came back, when we got promoted to the Premiership, quite a few of our fans were a bit sceptical about it, because we'd had Neil Alexander the season before, who was unbelievable when we got promoted. But Liam was superb our first season back up. Him along with Declan Gallagher, Craig Calcutt, Alan Lithgow, that back three in front of him, genuinely outstanding. And, you know, he deserved his move down south. And it was a shame it didn't quite work out for him there. But I think Motherwell have got themselves a top keeper. The fact he got, I think, your Players' Player of the Year after only being there from January, I think speaks volumes of how good the goalkeeper he is. And, you know, watching Sports Scene, he seems to regularly keep Motherwell in games. He's Motherwell's equivalent to Craig Gordon, essentially, I think, this season. And, you know, Ricky Lamy, Ricky's a strange one, because we signed him from Morton, and I think Ricky's downfall with us was that he didn't have a real good run of games in one position. I think when we got promoted, that back three was a staple of the team. It was the bedrock of our team, and Ricky kind of played most of that season at left wing back, and then we kind of moved that back for the following season, and he went between left back and left centre back. Tail end of that season, Gary Holt went back to a back three, but he brought in like Zeffie Ambrose and Kieran Brown came back on loan from Cardiff, and so he didn't really feature kind of second half of the season as a result. And you know, but he was solid for us, to be fair. He was solid, but he was just a bit unlucky, I think, in that he was a bit of that jack of all trades but master of none. Would probably be the best way of describing him with us. In terms of the players that are with us now, Nicky Devlin, not being biased, we love Nicky on the podcast because we sponsor him. but Nicky, last couple of seasons, has been brilliant. He just about scooped every Player of the Year award for us last year. His first season kind of got half because of a knee injury. I think the same knee he did whilst he was at Motherwell, thoroughly enough, having spoken to him. But Nicky's now club captain, and you know he's vital to us. And Jack McMillan's been very unlucky that he's had a decent right back in front of him, but Jack's been playing centre mid most of this season, and particularly the last few weeks, and he seems to have got a new lease of life. Davey's converted him over the last kind of 12 months into a sitting midfield player, and it suits him, to be fair. And Jack's been very unlucky at Livy in the sense that, again, he's probably a bit like Ricky Lamy. He can play right back, left back, centre back, centre midfield, wide on the right hand side. So, but he's one of those players that kind of puts in a 7 out of 10 every time he comes in. So, you know, he's probably fallen foul of the fact that he's so versatile and has never really nailed down a position, but got all the time in the world for Jack. I think he's been great for us anytime he's come in, and in particular, kind of recent run of form. The Hibs game, he scored the winner and was excellent in that game, for example. So he's been very good in recent weeks.
And we'll finish up by just kind of discussing, we hope to have the game on Boxing Day. As a visiting fan, it doesn't look like you're going to be able to go to the game, but what's your general experience of match day at Fir Park and following Livingston there?
Well, I mean, the last number of times I've been, where we either play quite well and still don't get a result, or we seem to have an absolutely horrific first half performance. As my recent experiences of Fir Park, the last time we won there was 2002-2003, so it's not been the best of hunting grounds for us, Fir Park, but it's a strange one. You know, going back to when we got promoted, we drew one each there and probably should have won the game in the end. Keegan Jacobs equalised was a pretty special free kick. Then the next game we played there, the next two, we were 3-0 down at half time, and could argue the first of those games, the 3-0 defeat, the first 45 minutes was arguably some of the worst stuff we've ever played under Gary Holt. I'd go as far as saying that. And then the 3-2 game, I think last day of the season. But it's a strange one. We either play quite well at Fir Park or absolutely horrific. Again, last season's a good example of that. The 2-each game we really should have won, in my opinion, right at the start of the season. And then the game kind of back March time, we lost 3-1. We were absolutely awful. So, yeah, not 100% sure what to expect from us when we go to Fir Park. There's never really a happy medium when we go there. And it's not been the best of hunting grounds for us in terms of getting points over the last few seasons.
And Pepe, we seem to be kind of talking about hypothetical games here, and that's just kind of the unfortunate nature of this podcast tonight. But the next couple of games are massive, I suppose. We've started on a positive note by beating St Johnstone. You then look at Livy at home, a trip to Ross County and a trip to St Mirren. These are all games that when we look at the fixture list, we hope to get points from. And if we were to do that, then you're looking at consolidating your place in the top six and maybe starting to look up the league table.
Well, certainly, I mean, with no disrespect to you, I say this every week, when you look at the fixtures, you would expect Mullerow to beat Livingston at home, as you would probably when we played St Johnstone last week. And I'm pretty sure as a Livingston fan, Mullerow at home would be one of the ones that they would pencil in for 3 points, so it's not been kind of disrespectful in any way, but I would expect us to go out and win the game in Boxing Day. And as Ewan kind of said, it's been a long time for Livingston came and won there. I hate talking like that because that's almost like me tempting fate. Wonder if that was around about the time of the Motorola Cup. I don't know if any of you remember that, when both of us were sponsored by Motorola and they put up a trophy for a midweek, obviously friendly, and the winners get presented with a cup. I can't even remember what the score was in that game. I wonder if any of you can remember.
The thing is, I'm still out in the piss for it. That was, 19 years ago? But that was, that was our last. And saying that, did we not play Man United in the Sir Matt Busby Cup as well, Pepe? Like, we played Man United reserves and won 1-0.
I remember beating Man United 1-0. It was always, doesn't matter if it's Man United reserves or not, still said Man United on the scoreboard, but I always remember the Motorola Cup as being something that was a wee bit surreal. Can you remember it, Ewan?
Very, very vaguely. It would have been before that last win. Might have been when we were, because our first season was in the top flight, was the only season we were sponsored by Motorola. So it must have been when we were probably in the first division, I would have thought. We were sponsored by Motorola then as well. So very, very vaguely remember it.
That's a blast for the past. But you know, I do think that, come back to the question, I think that when you look at these games coming up, all of them are winnable for Motherwell. Some difficult games, particularly up to Dingwall's never easy, and the others going to Paisley. But again, you wouldn't be surprised if it was the type of that you'd get and could win all of them. That's wishful thinking, but it's not above the realms of possibility either.
It's quite a strange one, isn't it? Because like Saturday,
try to describe the performance. It was a really straightforward win, but I'm not 100% sure how good we've been in these last kind of two or three games. I think at Easter Road, we played well for 45 minutes, played well for the first half at Celtic Park, and then we beat St Johnstone because they were so bad on Saturday. It wasn't an entertaining game by any stretch of the imagination Saturday, but Graeme Alexander's just got us in a vein of form that we get the job done.
No, I think that on Saturday we still had gears to go through. Scored a relatively early goal and we didn't really have much to kind of really worry about with St Johnstone. They didn't really cause us too many problems. A great save again for Liam Kelly in the second half, but other than that, they offered nothing, which is a real surprise for a St Johnstone team. Usually they come and they're kind of quite consistent at being at the same level, and it was a real surprise. We did win the game at an absolute canter, and even if they had come on and scored, I think it would have encouraged us to score more. That's the one thing that I was a wee bit disappointed about. Again, I thought Graeme Alexander's substitutions were a wee bit negative, whereas I think he could have went for a real cutthroat attitude, because I think they were there for the taking. But at the end of the day, it's about winning the game. It's not about winning 5-6-0. If you win, you'd have taken 2-0 before the start of the game. But I would just obviously as well, when we're talking about Graeme Alexander, it was a couple of weeks ago that I was saying it wouldn't surprise me if he was getting linked with other jobs, and I seen that he get linked with the pressing job. So if it continues, I really do think that he will be linked with other jobs, because I still think he's doing a great job. It's also hilarious that Tommy Wright gets sacked for Kilmarnock. As soon as I heard that, I don't know if you're aware of this, when obviously this time last year when Steve Robinson left Motherwell, there was get down to a kind of short list. I'm pretty sure it was Simon Grayson. Thank God he never got the job. Graeme Alexander and Tommy Wright. And there was a journalist, now I can't remember who it was, that said that...
Exactly what his name is. His name is Eric Nicholson, and I'll tag him in this podcast, right?
He said virtually that Motherwell had made an absolute disastrous appointing Graeme Alexander, who had a record that was questionable against a manager of the kind of a credence of Tommy Wright, obviously because he'd won the cup. But I don't know about you, but every time I'd watched any Tommy Wright's teams, it was just negativity all over. So there's quite a few Motherwell fans retweeted his nice kind of a introduction to Scottish football to Graeme Alexander.
Yeah, I think the Alexander appointment was a very solid one. The only question you maybe had over him was the fact that the vast majority of his career was down south, essentially. I think when Motherwell appointed Alexander, I mean, I watched quite a lot of EFL stuff, and he had a pretty decent record at Scunthorpe. I think he kind of finished playoffs two seasons on the bounce. Albeit Salford, you've got a bit of money behind you, but I think in the grand scheme of things, he's still done the job that was expected of him, and I think was kind of harshly sacked there, to be honest. So I think he had a decent record down south. You know, Tommy Wright, to be fair, on the resources he had at St Johnstone, did a fantastic job over a number of years. But I'd agree that the style of football I would have never classed as being attractive on the eye. I wouldn't say, you know, the brand of football Alexander plays is particularly attractive on the eye, going by, you know, what I've seen in comments that I've seen on Twitter and social media as well. So, but I think, you know, it was I would have never classed it as being a bad appointment at the time, bringing in Alexander, as I say, because when you actually go and look at his previous managerial record, it's actually not too bad, to be fair.
And also, anybody that signs Liam Polworth deserves to get sacked anyway, so that's just by the by.
Personal attacks aside, let's finish up by just kind of talking a wee bit about your podcast, Ewan, which has done fantastically well. You've had a whole host of Livingston players past and present on the podcast, including the manager. It seems to go from strength to strength.
Yeah, it was myself and Andy. He's kind of given it up back in the summer there, but We started it up our first season back in the top flight because, you know, a lot of the media stuff, Livy don't get a great deal of attention, and we thought it was just another avenue to try and promote the football club that wouldn't come of any cost to them. And as I mentioned earlier on, no, John Ward, the CEO, and we kind of spoke to him about it as well, and he was very forthcoming about, you know, getting access to players and the staff at the football club, and they've been, over the last years, have been fantastic with us. We've had, you know, Gary Holt was on a couple of times in his time at the club. Davey was on at the start of the season there, which was I think you'd struggle to find a manager that is as open and honest and tells you as much in detail in the Scottish game as Davey does to essentially just a fan, which I am. So, and I've been very lucky to get to speak to heroes of mine, essentially, from the 2004 Cup winning team. The likes of Stuart Lovell was on recently, who was the Cup winning captain. Had Roddy McKenzie, who was in goals that day. He's had Jamie McAllister, scored the second goal. Burton O'Brien as well, who one of my favourite players of all time at Livy. And we had Jim Leishman on as well, who anyone who knows Scottish football knows Jim's a wonderful, wonderful character. And I think he interviewed me more than me interviewing him on that one. But yeah, we've been very lucky to get as many players on in the current squads over the last two or three seasons, and hopefully get a few more on as the season goes on. It was very good last year to get to speak to the players, albeit over Zoom. We used to do them all in person, but you know, we had like Marvin Bartley on last season, who, again, anyone who sees him do any of his media stuff is fantastic, and he's got a very interesting career path to get to where he's got to. And the podcast has been fantastic, and you know, we don't have a lot of fans at the end of the day, and it's the way we look at it is it's an avenue for them to hear kind of lovely dedicated stuff and hear from players of, you know, that have been in some very successful Livy teams. And let's be honest, the players all have some great stories, because it's never been dull at Livy over the years. You know, up the leagues, back down the leagues, back up the leagues, cup finals, European football. And we only came to existence in 1995. So it's every player kind of has a different story of their time at the club, and makes for some interesting listening at times.
No, it's certainly right. And do you know what? It's very much for similar reasons that we're in this as well. It just is, there's something that provides a massive release, getting to talk about your team on a weekly basis. Our opinions might be controversial at times, they might be completely wide of the mark, but it's there's something very humbling when you get your kind of the opportunity to speak to your heroes, isn't it? And just these guys, especially I think former players, seem to always kind of, they love reminiscing, don't they?
Yeah, I mean, for example, Stuart Lovell was the last one we had on, and I'd been trying to get Stuart on for a number of months, but for whatever reason, you know, just it never kind of worked out on getting him on. But he came on recently, and I couldn't wipe the smile off my face the entire time I was chatting to him. He probably thought I'd screenshotted my face. I was just grinning like a Cheshire cat the whole time I was chatting to him. And it was the same when we had Jim Leishman on, because I remember being mascot for Livy when Jim Leishman was manager, and it was surreal getting to speak to him and talk about, as I say, in our club's history, probably the most successful year we've ever had. You know, when we finished third in the league, in the top flight in our first season, playing in Europe, you know, winning the League Cup as well. So getting to speak to those sort of guys has been fantastic. And you know, as you say, because they're former players, they're maybe not playing anymore, they're always a bit more open and honest, I think, because they've not got the same restraints of the professionalism aspect, and so it can make for some interesting listening. As I say, I think Stuart Lovell, just in his, had a go at gym trainer Colin Cameron, got name dropped in it that he had a dig at, so which was very entertaining.
No, absolutely, and I would like to take the opportunity to thank you for coming on tonight. I think that today feels like a bit of a difficult time to be a football fan, I suppose, given the circumstances and the announcement earlier on today, but it's been been really enjoyable, and I'm sure Pepe, you'll agree with that.
Yep, I'm just hoping that Ewan gets a podcast with Dolly Menga. I don't know why, but I just think it would be a good listen for some reason.
Dolly Menga. Oh, there's so many stories about Dolly. Oh, God. But Dolly, I don't know if you guys ever saw it. Dolly done a thing for the BBC, and Dolly's English isn't the best. And we had a boy on loan from Hearts, Bobby Burns, and he kept forgetting Bobby Burns' name. He kept calling Bobby Bell in the whole interview. And then there was, I got told a story by the boy that works for the West London Courier, and it was Dolly's last season at the club. He'd gone out to Angola for half a season and then came back. And I believe the reason that Dolly wanted to leave was he said he was homesick, but it turned out he also hadn't paid his council tax for a year. Because it turns out the boy that I sit next to at Livy was his next door neighbour. So he just didn't understand what council tax was, and he wanted to go home. And he came back, and we'd just signed Effie Ambrose, and I think Davey was giving him, give the ball to Effie, and Dolly was going, "Who is Effie?" And he's like, "Effie Ambrose." He's like, "Oh, I know an Ambrose. I know an Ambrose." no idea his first name was Effie. So, yes, Dolly was the enigma that is Dolly Menga. Very, very interesting character. I believe if you go on his social media most days, he's now out riding quad bikes all the time. So God knows where he is in the world. But, you know, very fond memories of one, his goal against Rangers, and then two, sending Christoph Berra for a hot dog about 7 or 8 times in the 5-0 game against Hearts. So he's cult hero status, I think, Dolly Menga.
Forget Talk Livy. I want him on the MFC podcast, actually. Like.
He said that he had that kind of cult hero look about him for an outsider looking in. It looked as if he'd probably be a real frustrating, but at the same time, you would, he'd be one of the players that all the fans would just take to, and if nothing else, he would give you a laugh, I suppose, for some madness that he would get involved in.
He was arguably the most frustrating player I've ever watched in my life. I actually, funnily enough, the game was at Fir Park. I think it was the game we lost 3-2 on the last day of the season. And I remember Dolly picked the ball up 25 yards from his own goal and managed to run the ball out for a Motherwell corner. And, like, you just kind of never knew what to expect when Dolly got the ball. And I don't think Dolly knew what he was going to do with the ball whenever he got it. As I say, he was an infectious character, and the way he went about things, and the fans loved him because he was something a bit different. But by God, he was arguably the most frustrating footballer I've ever watched in my life. Because I can only imagine how difficult it was to play with him, considering how unpredictable he was. So I think the other 10 players in the park had no idea what was going to happen when he got the ball either.
Well, guys, I think that's pretty much all we've got for tonight. I'd like to take the opportunity to wish everyone listening to the podcast a very Merry Christmas. I know that the kind of circumstances with football have changed so drastically in the last 24 hours that it might feel like a wee bit of a difficult time. In terms of the podcast Twitter, our DMs are always open. If you're feeling a wee bit shitty, please just, if you fancy a chat about football or just general life, we're more than happy to engage in that sense. And Ewan, thank you so much for coming on. It's been really entertaining. I've really enjoyed it.
No worries. Thank you so much for having me on. And maybe at some point, next game against you guys, if it ever happens this season, we'll get you guys on to Talk Livy as well.
Yeah, that would be a pleasure. Thank you very much again.
Cheers, Ewan.
No worries. Thanks for having me on, guys.
You've been listening to the MFC podcast. We'll be back. Oh, who knows when we'll be back, but we'll be back sometime. Until then, thank you and goodbye.